disappoint me. You literally went through and you like broke up like everything. It was like, no, the whole church, we need to know what this little PP is over the top of listening. And now you don't even remember it. Okay, well, that's all right. No, we've been through a lot the past few months. I'm not going to hold it against you, especially as much as I forget stuff. We are going to continue talking about the new normal. What to expect after we've all come out of this social distancing period where everybody is limited and people aren't gathering in masks and mass. I'm looking at mass, that's what I'm thinking. But when people aren't gathering in mass, when we've gotten back to a place where, you know, now there is a treatment, there is medicine that can help. We have a vaccine, and so people aren't afraid for their lives as they go out here into the world. And, you know, the interesting thing is people have made a lot of comparisons to other, you know, pandemics and other viruses and things like that. But the one simple thing that makes us a little bit different is not that it's particularly special in its fatality or even in how it affects people. It's not that different than the flu. The only difference is this is, you know, fairly new. There is no treatment that anybody prepared for. And so when we think about this new normal that we're going into as we start coming out of this, there are more and more states that just decided, you know what, we've seen enough. You know, we're going to open the gyms up. We're going to open the bars up. And some people just went a little, you should have seen some of the stuff I saw. It was quite amazing. People were just packed. And there was a place in Cincinnati where I'm from. They were just packed in this bar downtown. And I just thought to myself, man, all it takes is one. You know, that's what people forget. You can have 1,000 people packed in this place. All it takes is one person who's a carrier that walks around and starts coughing and sneezing and talking too loud, and a little spittle here and a little bit. And before you know it, now there are hundreds of people who are now carrying it to their family. So that's why, even though we are slowly breaking out and we're slowly opening more businesses and things like that, we still want to be careful. We still want to be cautious. We still want to make sure that we put proper prevention in place. My family, we went to Eden Hill. We went to go get checked to see if we had the coronavirus, checked to see if we had the antibodies. And part of the reason why I did this, next week we're going to be traveling. And so I said, well, you know, we're going to go visit. Charisse's grandmother turns 94 next week. And we just didn't want to miss it. We've all been in the house for months, so we knew we weren't contagious. But we wanted to go check anyway. And it was interesting because I let my dad know, like, hey, you know, we went and got checked. And guess what, Dad? I'm clear. And, you know, everybody's good. And he was like, so? Like, I'm still not letting you in. Like, you know, because there's some people that are like, look, I love you, but I can love you in August. I can love you later when, like, I know that I can get some help just in case. This is part of the new normal. People are taking precautions. People are, they have different judgments and different attitudes about it. And it's not for us to judge other people in their perspective. There are some people who, you know, we look and think, aren't you going a little bit too far? No. No, for them, there's a lot more risk involved than it is for other people. And so it's important that we understand that. What I want to look at today in particular, when we think about our faith, when we think about the church, I want to look at the new normal from a different perspective, because one of the things that happens is when we think about the church and how effective we are as a church. And when I say effective, I don't mean that in numbers and reports and measurables and things like that. I mean it, are we actually making a difference in the way that God would want us to make it? And what's stopping us? So often, I've said this over and over again over the past few weeks, I've talked about the word opportunity. Several friends of mine I grew up with, they've been going back and forth. And back in Ohio, people were upset. They said, well, how is it that the governors lifted these restrictions on bars and gyms and the malls open, but you're still having restrictions on church? Why are we still limited? And one of the things that, you know, my response is, and I truly believe this is an opportunity for the church to explore and see other ways in which we have to go about our ministry. This is an opportunity, and it shouldn't be seen as though somehow this is persecution or we're being slighted. No, it's just like schools haven't been reopened. Well, there's a reason why. It's because it's the same people, it's a group of people, and because you can actually educate and teach by other forms, by other means. Just like how we're doing social distancing right now, we're having worship service, and we're in our different places. But very often, we have to look at it from a personal standpoint. We have to say, not just, you know, in a macro view, what is this, how is this going to affect us in the macro perspective? How is this affecting me? What can I do? What is God trying to get me in my small group, me in my personal life? What is he trying to get me to see? And with that perspective about this being an opportunity, I want us to think about this word time. Because so often, and I was talking about, you know, my dad and how he's like, hey, I love you in August too. See, one of the things, and I've shared this in the past, one of the reasons why we're going to visit Sharice's grandmother next week is because she is 94. Now, when we talk about her being 94 and her being so, you know, advanced in years, same thing as we're praying for Kay's mother. You know, these are people who are older. And what happens is we think about them, we talk to them on the phone, but this social distancing is taxing because guess what? The fact of the matter, the reality is we don't know how many more times, even without social distancing, we don't know how many more times we're going to have an opportunity to be able to engage with Sharice's grandmother, who is 94 years old. We have to make the most of whatever opportunities we get. The same can apply for us. See, I'm 44, okay? So Sharice's grandmother literally is 50 years older than I am. But the fact is, I just take for granted that I'm going to make it into my 70s and 80s and 90s. But the fact is, I don't know how many more opportunities that I'm going to have to do many things. My life could be taken away from me immediately. My life could be taken away from me this week, tomorrow, tonight, anytime. And very often, we have to look at this new normal. We have to think about, how can the church be different and be better? How can we better represent the attitude of Christ moving forward? And it's because now that we're all facing our mortality and we're all looking at things differently, we have to be willing to ask ourselves some tough questions and ask ourselves, are we really taking every opportunity that God is giving us to be his vessels, to do the will that he has plan for our lives? The title I've given today for the lesson is, I wish you had more time. I wish you had more time. I borrowed this from a movie made several years back. It's a movie called Out of Time. It was a movie starred Denzel Washington. And Denzel Washington played this guy. He was in Mexico. His name was Creasy. And Creasy was charged to, there was this really wealthy guy in Mexico who had a daughter. And he was supposed to be the personal security, personal bodyguard for his daughter. But actually, it was a setup. The idea was he was going to essentially get knocked off because it was a setup for his daughter, this man, his daughter to be kidnapped. And it was all this big money scheme. And what happens is in this particular scene, he's trying to extract information because they had already kidnapped the girl. Now they shot him. He's recovered. Now he's going out and he's trying to get clues and put pieces together because he is determined to go find this girl that was kidnapped under his care. He's like, I'm not going to let this go this way. So he's talking to this guy who the police are involved and everybody, all these politicians, everybody's involved on this cover up, this kidnapping. And finally, he's talking to this one guy. He says, now, keep in mind, I didn't put this picture up because it was kind of bad. But the fact is, He's got this guy. He's tied down on his car. He's got explosives set to him, and he's trying to get information out of him. And this bomb is about to go off, and you can see the clock going. And right before the bomb goes off, the guy says, a last wish. He's asking, do I get a last wish? And his response was, wish? He said, I wish you had more time. And then, you know, dramatic scene. He walks off, everything explodes. But right before that, as he's asking him these questions, he says, listen, I want you to say, I'm really sorry that this all happened. None of this was supposed to go down like this. This was supposed to be really simple. It was going to be a kidnapping, but it was kind of a fake kidnapping. And it was all to extort money out of this guy. He said, this was all not supposed to go down this way. He says, it really wasn't personal. None of this is personal. It was business. And Denzel says to him, he says, you know, I'm really getting tired of hearing this. Everybody keeps saying the same thing. It's just business. It wasn't personal. There was nothing personal. He said, I'm really getting tired. Everybody keeps saying the same thing. And when we think about the church, even if we're not conscious about it, sometimes we can treat the church as a business. We can treat our faith. We can treat our walk with God as, well, I'm just doing the business. I'm just, you know, carrying out the business that the Lord gives me. I'm just doing the things, and it's not personal, you know. It's not something I'm doing with any real intent or any real heart behind it. And we have to ask ourselves, do we take our calling to be like Christ personal enough? Is it something that we are invested in a personal way? Or is it just we're just doing things because this is just what we're told to do? Because that's what's going to make the church different. When we start taking it personal and it's not just something that we're just doing as business or business as usual. I want to look at the book of John, John chapter 9. There's a couple of quotes here I want to read through. This one, it says, priorities. He defines it, when someone tells you that they are too busy, it's not a reflection of their schedule, it's a reflection of your spot on their schedule. Sometimes when we think about what is a priority to us, is the work of the Lord a priority to us? The question isn't, do we have time? That's one thing about the coronavirus. It has definitely provided more time. Even if you're an essential worker, guess what? You have more time because even when you're done being essential, there's nowhere to go. You have time. But the question is the work of the Lord still a priority? Because even if you can't get it done one way because you're limited by social distancing, you can get it done another way if it's important enough to you. Another one, nobody is too busy. It's just a matter of priorities. And you might think, well, that's an opinion and that's just your thought. Again, the idea here is for us to really think, how much of a priority do we make the work of the Lord? How essential is it that we do the things that God asks us to do? Is it a personal matter? You know, I use that example from that movie Out of Time because for everybody else, this was just what they were doing to get some money and it was no big deal. But it was personal for him. He had developed a relationship with this little girl. He had developed a relationship with this family. It was personal. Do we look at people who are lost, who don't have a relationship with God, who are uncertain as they are in fear for their life right now? Do we look at that as something that is personal to us? We're going to look in John chapter 9 now. Starting in verse 1, it says, as he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Go, he told him. Wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes open?" they asked. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see." "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. Now, for those of us who've been reading the Bible for a while, we've probably come across this scripture, and we see this miracle that Jesus creates, but I want to put this in context, because right before we get to John chapter 9, back in John chapter 8, Jesus says something that really helps give this some context, because the people were mad at him. The Pharisees were upset, and they wanted to attack him. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to do away with him, and Jesus was totally unconcerned because he understood that it was not his time. He understood that there's nothing that's going to happen. There's nothing to be worried about because it's not my time. I'm not finished with the work. But he makes this point in verse 4 where he says, we have to work while it's daytime. We have to get this done in this moment. You have this window of opportunity is what Jesus is trying to express to the disciples here. This situation with this man who was born blind, he said, this is not because somebody sinned or somebody did something wrong. This is done for this particular purpose, for me to be able to display my power. Do we look at what's going on with COVID-19 as a church and think, this is an opportunity not to create fear and hysteria and political battles and fights over ideology and whose fault it is that we didn't have a vaccine and who did this and who didn't do that? Do we as a church understand that this is a window of time that's been created for us to do the work while we still have this moment? While people are still in their homes, while they're still limited, before businesses and everything opens up all across the country and all across the world, do we truly understand that this is an opportunity, a window of time? Even Jesus, all-powerful, limitless, he understood there are opportunities that you're going to have. And we have to work, as he said, while it's still day. Are we executing the will of God while we have this opportunity? Many of us, we have family, we have neighbors, friends, coworkers, people that we know are not in a relationship with God. Are we willing to seize this moment and this opportunity to show them who God is? Are we brave enough to approach them in that way? Even Christ recognized during his ministry that opportunities are limited and timing matters. You know, I talked about, you know, my grandmother, Sharice's grandmother, and the fact that she's 94. Here's the thing. Those opportunities, because of her age. Now, here's the thing. In her genetics and in her family, she's likely to be here for a lot longer. Like, I'm not too worried about it. But the fact that she's 94, I can't just take for granted that there are opportunities for my kids to go spend time with their great-grandmother. Do we view the work of God the same way? Do we view people who are lost the same way? God is giving us an opportunity. He is opening up a window for us to share our faith. We talked about that on Wednesday night during our midweek devotional, our midweek Bible study, talking about coming up with a list of people that we can share our faith with and we can reach out to. Are we executing on that? Are we doing that? Because we know we have sons and daughters and brothers and sisters and parents and spouses and neighbors and people who need to come to God and have a relationship with him, who need to give their life to him. Are we willing to seize this opportunity for that? This was interesting. These are some funny memes. Because, you know, I saw this lady, it was an older lady who in this one meme, she says, look, I'm not even counting 2020 against my age. Like, I don't care what my birthday is, because I'm just throwing it out. She said, I didn't even use it, right? Like, I didn't even get to use this year, so I'm not counting it as a year of my age. I'm still 78, right? Like, I'm not going to be 79 this year. We're going to do a redo. That's kind of how this year feels. It's like, not that it's a wasted year, but you didn't really get much out of it. It's like you when you return something to the store, it's like I barely opened a box. That's kind of how 2020 is. I found this comical. My amazing 2020 plans, and it right after that, a taxism, and that's coronavirus, right? Just totally ruins everything. Here's another one I thought was entertaining. And I thought about Jennifer Huffman when I saw this week. It says, when you find out your daily lifestyle is actually called quarantine. I'm that guy. I'm totally that guy. Like, I personally enjoy my private space and not having to be around people. And who knew that my preferred lifestyle was actually called quarantine? Here's another good one. I thought about a lot of people with this one. How to properly greet someone during the coronavirus. No more shaking hands. We are now doing the Spock, you know, the Vulcan greeting. There's so much that's changing the way that we're going to, because even when we come out, as we're back gathering together, like I said, we're going to have our cookout and everything. And, you know, I encourage people, just come up like this, because we're not going to be shaking hands. I know I want to give Miss Shanita the biggest hug I can, but guess what? Probably shouldn't. You know, everybody's going to want to flock over to Mary Bays and give her a hug. Don't. You know, we still have to keep our distance. That's part of that new normal. But I want to look at another passage talking about this new normal. Found this funny also. This is Oprah Winfrey. This was a spoof on Oprah Winfrey. You get homeschool and you get to homeschool. Everybody gets to homeschool. And that would be funny for those of you who don't have little kids at home and you're actually having to homeschool. It is so not a joke. I was talking to a friend of mine. He's a principal. And, you know, he was just saying how it's not that the teachers and administrators and principals and everybody have given up. But, you know, when you just totally have to throw out, rip up lesson plans and all your grades and everything go out the window, because immediately everything got shifted when they shut down schools. This is a part of that new normal, but I want to look at another part of this new normal. And, again, looking at the opportunities that God gives us, James chapter 4, another passage that many of us are probably familiar with. James chapter 4, verse 13 through 17. It says, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Many of us, in this passage, really the whole chapter there, chapter 4, he's talking about boasting. He's talking about men making plans, deciding that this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to make more money. This is how we're going to prosper ourselves, and this is how we're going to build wealth for ourselves. We're going to do all these things, and we make these plans with the assumption that we have tomorrow. If there's nothing else that we've learned about the coronavirus, if there's nothing else that COVID-19 has taught us, is that we have no control. This is exactly what James 4, the whole thing he's talking about. He says, you actually have no control. You have to, he talks about God's will. You have to make plans in accordance with God's will, which means you have to do things based on God's time. When we think about how the church moving forward, how we have to be different, we have to do things. We don't need to set up ministries, and we don't need to go out and do activities and have events based on convenience or based on what works for us or based on what's easiest for us. We have to train our thinking to be different and say, we have to do things that are best going to help forward the gospel. We have to plan things that are most effectively going to reach other people. God wants his children to be in relationship with him. Are we making plans? Do we schedule things? Do we consider our personal walk with God, our personal ministry? Do we frame it in that way? Our new normal as a church must include trusting and committing our plans to God. What is the first thing? When you think about, I want to do this thing, I want to give this thing to God. I'm going to talk about this in a couple weeks about the word consecration, this idea. And I'll get into that, like I said, in a couple weeks. But the idea behind the word consecrate is that you prepare something to be given in sacrifice, something that you're giving to God. So when he talks about consecrating yourself, when we make our plans, when we, as a church, we have activities, do we do these things because it's what we did last year, because it's fun, because it works for us? Or do we do these things with the attitude that I'm going to give this to God? I'm going to prepare this for the work that God has? So much of what we have to change as a church, in order for us to be the church that God wants us to be, is all of our plans, all of our thoughts, all of the different ideas that we have to be in accordance with God's will. How do we go about doing that? I want to end with a few questions here as we finish up. First one, is the ministry that you've been called to something that you have a personal stake in, or is it extra work? I ask it in that way because, you know, the thing about it, I was talking about homeschooling and how that's been an adjustment. That's part of the new normal, right? That's part of that. I really, truly hope and pray that it does not continue on through the rest of my children's schooling. But the fact of the matter is, this is something that we're having to adjust to. And like I said, those who don't have little children who are still in school, you know, you're kind of exempt from this. This is not something that's affecting you. But here's the thing. For me, it's personal. It's not just some idea or some concept about school districts and whether they open and close and how they go about their business. It is personal for me. Why? Because I want my children to get an education. Is it personal? Is the will of God for your life something that is personal for you, or is it just a duty or a requirement that we treat as work? Are we just clocking into church? Are we just turning in our timesheet? Or is it something that's personal? How much do we care on a personal heart level? Second question, what do you need to start making time for? What opportunities is God setting you up for that require new preparation? What are we making time for? You know, in James there, when they talk about how we make all these plans and we go about all of these different endeavors, are we actually making plans that God approve of? We think about, you know, there's that saying, you know, man makes plans and God laughs. Very often, that's what we do. And we can say, yeah, but I'm doing this for God and I prayed about it. And this, yeah, that may be what you want. That may be what's most comfortable for you. That may be what fits for you. But is that actually a part of God's plan? Did you check with him first? The example I think of all the time is, you know, how Saul, and he kind of gets a bad rep, but Saul, King Saul, he goes out, and this is before Samuel comes to him and points out to him that he is no longer the anointed king. But he comes to him, and he says, what's going on, Saul? He's like, oh, well, I did exactly what the Lord asked me to do. I, you know, destroyed everybody. We killed everybody, and you know, we killed most of everything. He said, no, you were supposed to kill all of it. Well, yeah, we just kept a few things. You know, we did most of it. See, in his mind, even though Saul kind of gets a bad rap, guess what? Very often we can do that exact same thing. We're like, well, I've done most of what he asked me to do, forgetting that one key ingredient, all and everything. And sometimes we can have the same attitude where we lose sight of the fact that if I'm actually giving this thing to God, if I'm actually investing this time, did I actually ask God how much of my time? Well, yeah, I spend an hour a week, you know, calling people, praying with people. Well, did you ask God how much time you need to spend doing it? Did you actually talk to God, consult with him and say, how much time should I invest in this? How much money should I invest in this? What should I be doing with my resources and my time? Do we check with God? Third thing, how does your mentality and process affect your outlook on life and uncertainty? Do you make plans based on what makes sense or what God will bless? You know, God, everything that we do, we think that, oh, well, you know, I did it and I prayed over it, and so that should be it. Well, here's the thing. We've seen this in many cases, you know, going all the way back to Cain and Abel. God doesn't bless every single sacrifice. Every sacrifice that we bring is not what God required. It's not what he asked. Do we actually approach our time? Do we approach this moment, this window in time as, God, what would you have me do during this time? You know, going back to that, you know, that saying, you know, this is all just business. This is not personal. One of the things that happens is that very often, if we're not careful, we might think, well, yeah, but I don't come to church and think of it as business. I was working on a paper talking about tax-exempt status because churches and other nonprofits of that ilk are considered tax-exempt. And people criticize that, and they don't like that, and they feel like, well, churches are just big businesses and everything. And we can look at that and think, oh, that's so cynical and that's so terrible. But then when we think about the time that we give to the work of the church, we can kind of look at it and think, you know, subconsciously, maybe not on the forefront of our mind, we can kind of think, well, yeah, but the preacher, he's kind of like the CEO who gets that salary, and then when he leaves, he takes a big windfall and runs off some money. And then we can kind of think of our board of directors or our elders and the people who lead the congregation. We can kind of think of them as the business, that corporation that has a board, you know, that has investors, and oh, we have to do what's best for the bottom line of those who've invested in the business. See how that thinking works. We're not just here for each other. Yes, it matters that we strengthen one another, but we also have to consider what's best for everyone else. Those around us, those in our neighboring communities, those who we come in contact with. What is our process? How do we look at it? Do we look at this time as if we're just going to hold on? So many businesses right now, so many corporations are going bankrupt because they just can't keep their doors open. And so many businesses are taking the attitude, we're just going to do whatever we can to keep our doors open. We're just going to do whatever we can to make sure that we don't hemorrhage too much. Instead of having the attitude of, this is an opportunity for us to do something different. This is an opportunity for us to emerge and break new ground. Is that our attitude right now in this time of uncertainty? Is that our perspective? Normally I wouldn't bring this up, but this is something I want to share. A couple weeks ago, I believe it was, I called and I spoke to Curtis, and I asked him. I said, Curtis, here's the deal. I said, I want to ask you about this because I want to know how, and I don't keep up on the money and the budget and everything. I said, but here's the deal. I know that people are strained. People are not working as much. People don't have as much money. I don't know what the income has been. I don't know what the giving has been like. If I need to take a cut, if I need to give back some salary, if I need to do something different, please feel free. You, George, whoever, you all get together and you let me know. And he said, you know what? You don't have to be concerned about that. We're fine. We're solvent. But, and when I say that, I'm saying this because this has to be the same attitude that we have. Not, just in finances, but understanding that when there are constraints, when there is uncertainty, this isn't a time for us to tighten up and get scared and start hoarding our time and hoarding our resources. This is a time for us to jump into action and say, how can I give? How can I sacrifice? What is it that I can do more of? Because that's what people who don't know God, that's how they can tell that we are Christians, by our love, by our willingness to give and support and sacrifice, even when it hurts us. And finally, who will be directly impacted moving forward by the commitment that you make during this time of distancing? See, it gets really personal when you think about who is actually going to be impacted. The 2, 3, 4 months, however long it is that we're in this space, who have you had a personal impact on? When Jesus tells this story about this man born blind, he says, no, this is done not only so that he can be healed, but so that others can see it. Who can you be having a personal impact on that, yes, it will affect them directly, but those around them will also be impacted? None of us live on an island. None of us are in a bubble. None of us are isolated in such a way that we are not connected. The things that you commit to the Lord, the plans that you commit to Him, the time that you invest into His work, those things have an impact on so many other people, not only around you, but around those individuals. The meals you prepare, the traveling and the transporting people back and forth to their hospital visits, and those phone calls that you make, those cards you send out, that person that you say, hey, listen, do you feel like you're close to God? Do you have a relationship with God? Rather than guessing and wondering and being uncertain, you can be sure. And you don't even have to worry because you know that God is going to take care of you if you give your life to Him. Is that a conversation that you need to be having with someone? Maybe you had that same conversation with them 5 years ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago. Is that a conversation that you need to be having with them now? Maybe you've never had that conversation. Maybe you've never approached that topic like we talked about a few weeks ago. Maybe it's someone who's given up and they've left. Have you talked to them about their commitment? Because if it's just business, if it's no big deal because it's just business, then, yeah, we can leave that to someone else, or we can look at our bottom line and think it's not really hurting us. But when it's personal, and for all of us, there's something and someone where it's personal, do we care enough about them that we're willing to go to those lengths to reach out to them? Do we understand the church and that the church will not continue to live? It will die when the mission of Christ is something that's not personal. How personal is it to you that you do the will that God has?